Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 1,000 trades for 2015. We're also going to be kind of recapping the aggregate of the top 300 trades from the monthly lists over the course of the year, comparing the two, seeing what there is to see, and maybe there'll be some surprises, maybe there'll be some mistakes even. And the reason I point that out is this year, as is usually the case, the top 1,000 list for trades and comics, each one, came out with no index value. And that's pretty standard for Diamond. I appreciate when they put the value in there. But what that means is to get the estimated total reported units for some of these things, I basically have to go back to the top 300 list for every month and just total those up.
Mm-hmm.
And where we will typically see mistakes, and I'm just saying this up front because I haven't got a technical solution for it yet, and trust me, it sounds like something that should be simple, but it's a little more work than that. First volumes of a trade, often when they're initially released, it's just like The Walking Dead, or The Walking Dead and whatever the subtitle was of the first trade. But then when a second trade comes out, suddenly that first trade is now The Walking Dead Volume 1, colon, whatever the subtitle was.
Okay.
So sometimes I miss some of those earlier sales on these aggregate numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried to correct where I can and stuff like that, but I'm just going to say at the outset, we're going to have some of that, and it's going to be, you know, just these are ballpark figures. When we get to the aggregates of the top 300 by month and stuff, those are pretty rock solid as they usually are.
Mm-hmm.
So TJ, you read a lot of trades. How many of these have you read? No, I'm kidding.
Definitely not the entire list, that's for sure.
It's, again, 1,000 items. It's a long list. And this is a list that often has more surprises for me than the top comics, partially because I pay closer attention to the monthly comics, just because that's what I tend to read, but also because something can float below the radar of the top 300 and rack up some pretty serious sales over the course of the year. In the case of 2015, something could have floated just below the top 300 trades and done somewhere around 4,900 units.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty serious amount, particularly when you figure that we get to about that point. Let me...
Oh, well, 151.
151, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I was putting a splitter bar on my spreadsheet, and you were just faster at the draw than I was. But yeah, some of these things are just are selling really well, kind of below the radar or whatever. The other thing with this that's going to look a little odd, more to TJ than to the listeners because they can't see the spreadsheet. I've got one column for the estimated total reported units. This column H is just, again, the sum of what I found on the top 300 list for the last 12 months. This number bounces up and down.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes one item that has, say, let's see, what's one of the first examples of this? At rank 16, Fables Volume 22, it sold, I've got known sales of 20,661 units, but the item right below it, Sex Criminals Number 2, I've got known sales of 21,169. Now, wait a sec. How could something that sold over 21,000 be ranked lower on the list than something that sold 20,000-ish? Well, the one that sold 20,000-ish must have done at least another 535 units to put it on par with that.
Gotcha.
Those are the unreported units. I am not guessing. I am doing math.
Mm-hmm.
There could be errors in the math in terms of maybe I didn't pick up all the reported units, whatever. This is where all of my data cleaning mistakes over the course of a year really come back to haunt me. And man, on the trade side, it's just it's easier to pick this stuff up and fix on the comic side than the trades.
Mm-hmm.
So total reported known units from the top 300 over the course of the year, how many it had to do to rank where it did, and then an estimated yearly total sales. This is the ballpark estimate, which is just the sum of the two. So Column J is the one that goes down steadily in kind of a weird stair-step manner because of a couple of weird things here and there. And occasionally there will be items that have unreported units well in excess of that 4,900 I mentioned. Again, for whatever reason, they just didn't either show up on the monthly list, or my system didn't find them, or something of that sort. A good example of that is at rank 65, where we've got the Young Terrorists from Black Mask Comics, which at 699 is like, is this a trade or is this a comic? My list couldn't find it. It's entirely possible that is because it showed up on the comics list and maybe shouldn't have been here.
Yeah, and with that price point, it's not surprising.
Yeah. So we're going to hit some issues like that, but you know, the top three items on this list were Saga. Image, again, took the top three slots. Each of these did at least 44,755 units over the course of 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And with the top rank one being volume 4, followed by volume 1, followed by volume 5, that first volume obviously has sold more in previous years as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this correlates well. You know, I listen to another number of different podcasts, and oftentimes those different podcasts will have retailers on and things like that. And also, Brian Hibbs released a kind of a spreadsheet of his top sellers. Obviously, not telling you exactly how many of these sold, but just relative to each other. And in his top 10, I think at least 4 of the items were Saga. And another store said that Saga actually sold 2.5% of their actual entire year's revenue for one title.
Which
on one hand is scary. On another, it tells you how successful Saga is.
You know, on the one hand, it is a little scary to be that, you know, reliant on a single thing. But 2.5% is not a make or break kind of amount, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, mm-hmm. they'd be hurt without that 2.5%. But it's not like it was like 20% or something.
Mm-hmm.
Something where it's like suddenly they've got to let an employee go or cut back their hours or something serious. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So it's impressive that Saga is the one selling that. I don't recall hearing any store ever say the same thing about Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
But given the number of trades, hardcovers, compendiums, etc., I've got to imagine at some point that was a similar kind of juggernaut for them, for some retailers.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, these type of titles, the Saga and the Walking Dead, I mean, seeing these numbers here, I can't even imagine what a company like Amazon sells. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's something that, again, those numbers don't show up here, but anyone who's like, I've heard about this, a friend tells me about it, they're as likely as not to go hit something like Amazon
mm-hmm.
than to go figure out where the local comic store is and go hit that.
Yeah, or they're in their local Barnes & Noble, and they're just walking up and down the aisles, and they see it, and they go, oh, yeah, that's the title that my friend told me about. And yeah. So they pick it up, thumb through it, and, you know, things like that. So
rounding out the top five, we've got Civil War trade paperback from Marvel there at, 43,119 units. And then Walking Dead number volume 23, that trade paperback, 33,208 units.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going below that, we've got Batman the Killing Joke, that hardcover, man, that's still doing just strong over the years. 32,415. Volume 2 of Saga, 32,011 units. Volume 1 of Walking Dead, I've got 31,659 units. Maybe that should be accurate for that. All of it this year would have been under Volume 1. It's only if it switched from Volume 1 to not being numbered over the course of 2015, should it be a little wonky here. But then Saga Volume 3, 29,542. And then rounding out the top 10, Star Wars Volume 1 trade paperback from Marvel, 27,193 units. So for all of them in the top 10, the number of units I can account for matches the order they're in. Sure, they could have sold a couple hundred more, or even a few thousand more in one or two cases, but as long as they sold less than the one above it.
That makes sense.
So these are more kind of minimum that I can vouch for, not saying this is exactly what they sold.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I want to be clear on that as much for any creators that are listening as for any other listeners, because in some past years, I've had one or two come back with, that's not how well my stuff sold, and, you know, one or two cases, the the year-end numbers really kind of backed that up. DMZ was a good example of that one year. Mm-hmm. Like a third or two-thirds of its sales had happened under the radar. It was astounding. It was very impressive. We've talked about that Fables Volume 22. That was the first one that had some potentially unreported units. What else do we have in here? Again, we've got a lot of, frankly, a lot of not DC titles.
Oh, absolutely. And any of the DCs are, you know, evergreens or things that they've been reprinting to kind of bring back their stock back up, things like that.
Yeah. Or predominantly Batman or maybe some of the Earth One stuff. So, you know, just looking at the list, it shows that again, Image is doing pretty well on some of the trades. Marvel's doing all right. DC has a couple of properties, but it really takes a while down the list for those to really start kicking in beyond the evergreens, the Batman, the Earth One, frankly, the sort of stuff you should expect to see higher on the list from DC.
Yeah. What strikes me just in general is that for the top 25 trades for the year, you really see the cumulative effect of the last couple of years of Image building itself up. I mean, if you really think about how big of juggernauts DC and Marvel are, for Image to be able to really, really sustainably impact the top of the list, and obviously it's a little bit different on the comic side due to the fact that the huge relaunches and the, you know, huge amount of variant covers and, you know, how the big two do those things.
Yeah.
But just in the trade market, that when I see a chart like this, it just really reinforces for me how successful that model can be, because a lot of times the trades is where the creators actually make a sustainable living. A lot of times printing the single issues is literally a break even or a little bit of a loss, and the trades and a little bit of digital is actually how they make a positive net income living.
Absolutely. The monthly stuff pays for the content creation, hopefully keeps them in, you know, food and shelter and stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's when you get the tens of thousands of units on the trade stuff. And some of this is material that had been put together in years past.
Mm-hmm.
So other than saying, hey, keep it in print, there's not a whole lot of effort necessarily for them to get the benefit of these sales.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, just in general, it's also interesting if you look at it, you flip that perspective and say, if I was Marvel and DC, I would be like, there's an interesting, and it may just be their business model is completely different and they're so periodical focused, but I would be very concerned to see Image basically eating my lunch on the year-wide trade list. You know what I mean?
Well, I think it's reflective of a couple of things. First off, I had a discussion one year with, and it was a really brief discussion with Dan Didio on the floor of the convention at San Diego. And one of the comments he made was indicative of, he's in charge at the time of getting those monthly books out. Somebody else was dealing with the collected editions, because mm-hmm. that was what my question at the time was about. So it was a very much, we're doing the new material. Somebody else is dealing with, is it profitable on the long haul or not, and how they package it, which makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Different market, different expertise. But it also comes down to Image having a fundamentally different model. Image doesn't go into a year with a, we're planning on doing these titles. They are more reactive in that respect than proactive with, people brought us this, these are the ones we're going to say, yeah, we'll publish these, we'll work with you on this.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Marvel and DC, they've got their creative summits, they've got their, you know, X-year plan or whatever. I mean, they knew that Secret Wars was coming out, you know, early last year. They knew with the game, or early, probably sometime 2014, they knew the plan for 2015. That's what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very different model there. And should DC and Marvel be concerned by the success Image is having here? Absolutely. It's showing there is a bigger interest in Saga, in Walking Dead and stuff, than in most of the DC books and most mm-hmm. of the Marvel books. And that doesn't surprise me much,
mm-hmm.
but it does seem a little bit odd given, you know, how comparatively young Image is. Granted, it's over 20 years old now. But publishers who've been doing this literally for decades, it's like they've lost their game. You know, and the new kid on the block is again, taking the top of the list away from them.
Yeah. And I also think, there's some other variables at play. I think one of the issues is that for non-traditional comic readers, a trade is a place sometimes like a gateway in. And I think that we've talked repeatedly about how Marvel and DC make it difficult for people to guess basically an on-ramp into their series. Whereas creator-owned series, you always start with volume one, and there's very rarely renumbering or retitling. And, you know, at least in my opinion, unless it's a series, a miniseries, like you see in the Hellboy world at Dark Horse. But even then, there's a lot of basically ways that they keep that straight for the customer. It's just easier to kind of get on board and sample if you're not a hardcore comics person for Image series and the creator-owned comics and the idea that Marvel and DC are such expansive universes, and so it can paralyze you if you want to get involved and be like, where do I start? But in Image, there's a lot of on points.
Well, and each one is selling on the strength of that property, mm-hmm. not the Image line in general.
Mm-hmm.
It gets the benefit of the strength of the brand and stuff.
Yeah.
But that's very different than Justice League, which is, you know, selling some of what it's selling based on the popularity of Batman, Superman, other characters, other titles in that universe.
Yeah. And the way you said that actually makes me want to make up a very good point, is that the last 2 or 3 years of success for Image has allowed the retailers to have faith in the publisher and be able to order up and put the material in a advantageous place for their customers to see. Because remember, we always talk about publishers fighting over rack space. And I think that Image has done enough in the last couple of years where the retailers are willing to put their material forward. And if that's half the battle, to be honest with you, is getting enough space where you can be seen and then you sampled and then further kind of hook readers.
Absolutely. This is not something that just kind of happened by itself. Image put some definite time and work into, again, getting stuff out on time, getting the faith from the retailers they needed to get their books on the racks to sell them, etc. Absolutely. The other thing that's interesting, just within the top 25 trades here, is we go from that top item of 47,245 units down to 17,593 units. So there's an almost 30,000 unit drop there between the number one rank and the number 25 rank. So this is a game where the guys at the top are doing way, way, way better than, you know, it falls off drastically as the list goes down.
Mm-hmm. And I think you generally see this in any sort of art, in the art world. There are a few lottery winners, and I'm not saying lottery winners just based on pure luck, you know, a lot of it's skill and a lot of it's presentation and hard work, but there are, in almost any art, their form of art, there are lottery winners who kind of have this like force multiplication at the top, and then you have a lot of a very slender long tail towards the end.
Absolutely. Again, the ones that hit big, hit really big, a lot of the others just do okay.
Yeah.
And there's kind of that inflection point somewhere in that curve.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't expect everything to do gangbusters. I mean, that just isn't the way the market is. It's not the way any market is, really.
Mm-hmm.
Most of what I'm seeing at the top of the list is trade paperbacks. We've got the occasional hardcover. I see that as much a reflection of price point as anything else.
That is absolutely true. That was another thing I was going to remark is, you know, you're doing a quick scan as you slowly go down. You just see trade paperback, and the occasional hardcover. And I absolutely think that that's a price point issue. I think just like in the periodical form, when people have more than one or two series they're trying to keep track of, they run into the budgetary issue, and trade paperbacks are oftentimes much more affordable, especially from Image. And the reality is you have a set budget. And this one is $9.99 or $14.99, and Marvel wants $29.99. It takes a lot more thought before you pull the trigger.
Absolutely. There are a couple of things that it's like, yeah, I'd like to have it, but at that price point, I'm sorry, I got to pass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's whenever I go through my monthly order form before sending it into DCBS, I look at that total. It's like, is it low enough I feel I should look for a few more items, or is it high enough that I filter to the list to the high price point items and just say, well, which of these do I knock off?
Mm-hmm.
Just because that takes less time and effort. A lot of the list this time around, if we jump down to the breakdown of it, which is down at row 1051 through 1081, most of it was DC with 341 items. We had 287 items from Marvel, 166 from Image, 60 from Dark Horse, 35 from IDW, 14 from both Boom and Dynamite, and then 13 from Random House, which that's how the stuff shows up on the Diamond list. Often that's not who it appears to be published by when you actually look at the item, which is kind of annoying, but that's the way it works.
Yeah, I think a number of these smaller houses basically have a distribution deal. Mm-hmm. So it's almost to the point where the small places, Random House is their first diamond, and then Random House has a deal with Diamond. So it's like this player within a player thing, but that's just because the deals they can sign with Random House, I guess, due to the size of Random House, allows them to get better terms from Diamond.
Absolutely. There's a lot to be said for having kind of that umbrella publisher, distributor, mm-hmm. however you want to see it. I'm not sure the exact business model, so it's hard to say. What I found really interesting was if I looked at the breakdown of publishers by the estimated total reported units that I can actually, you know, look at and say, yep, I can guarantee they had this much, DC was the winner. You know, followed by Marvel Comics and stuff. And the number of units they've got of potential unreported and then total sales, I mean, that took DC from around 1 million to around 3 million if you add in the potential of 2 million unreported units.
Mm-hmm. And it appears to have taken Image from 6 to 2 million 150,000 plus. I'm not sure if that's a typo or...
That's got to be a typo. That's actually... okay. Presumably when I was writing the article, I messed up. If you copy the formula above it into there...
Okay.
That's what was confusing me.
Okay.
Image, actually, was the one with 1,037,590 units uh-huh. of reported sales. They had the most reported sales,
mm-hmm.
which is, 18,000 more than DC's. But they've got potentially 1 million less units, all of that gap being because of the unreported units.
Okay.
Yeah, I must have just hit the wrong button when I was using the Excel file to put together my CBR article.
Oh, yeah. I mean, looking at all these columns and stuff, I shudder at how you keep all this straight, to be honest.
Oh, God. Again, this is one of the roughest spreadsheets to put together because I do it once a year.
Yeah.
The format of the data changes, and I've got like 30 queries I got to go run.
Yeah.
And I do it once a year, so I haven't fully automated it.
Yeah, well, and it would be very hard to automate, I would think.
I need to get to where I can, to where every month I've got a version of this that's just the last rolling 12 months.
Yeah, that is a good point. The rolling 12 months would probably definitely help you.
And it'd just be interesting to look at.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And... Again, you look at, you were talking about, again, Image just eating their lunch or whatever in terms of having stuff at the top of the list. It's not just having stuff at the top of the list, but the dollar values. Now, actually, because they've got a lower average price point, typically, Image may have done somewhere in the realm of, you know, $15 million
mm-hmm.
Of sales versus the over 20 for both Marvel and DC.
Yeah. And I think a big part of that also is that the Marvel and DC have many more things like Absolutes and Omnibuy that are, you know, over $100 easily. And they have multiple items of those a year. Most Image books top out at maybe that Walking Dead compendium at $60. You know what I mean? So there's a lot more high ticket items in DC and Marvel.
Well, and if we filter the top 1,000 items to $59.99 or above.
Mm-hmm.
The $59.99 ones or the Walking Dead Compendium 1, 2, and 3, actually in the order of 3, 1, and 2, the Spider-Verse hardcover, the Star Wars Marvel Years Omnibus hardcover, the S.H.I.E.L.D. Complete Collection Omnibus,
mm-hmm.
Hawkeye by Fraction and Aja Omnibus,
mm-hmm.
the Fantastic Four Omnibus, the Wonder Woman by George Perez Omnibus, and the Avengers Omnibus.
Yeah, so you can see how that would skew the numbers slightly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's, again, seeing some of the big ticket items on the top 1,000 for the year, frankly, is a little surprising. Just because, again, they're not cheap. So like that Star Wars, the Marvel Years Omnibus, that's $125.
Mm-hmm.
So even I would take a look at that and say, not so sure.
Yeah, and it's clear that they don't sell huge numbers of them, but they still sell. I mean, if you look over there, the reported units, 1,800 that at $125, that's substantial. You know,
one thing that I mentioned on, I think it was the year end episode, of how one of the forum posters, and I was just looking at the post and the name escapes me. I apologize. Posts what Comic Bento has in their stuff every month. If you filter this list to the low price point of $2.70, you get Bob's Burger Comic Bento Edition trade paperback at rank 847. I don't know what the cover price on that is. I don't have this kind of pulling all that data, but that's very clearly indicative of again, some of the discounting that happens for those subscription boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes perfect sense.
Yeah, which makes sense, yeah.
I mean, if I were ordering, in this case, 4,810 units, it looks like, all of which were unreported, I would expect a pretty good discount, too.
Absolutely.
And that's just how that part of the business works.
Mm-hmm.
But it was nice that they had at least noted that that's what that was.
Yeah.
The bottom of this list seems to be around 856 units, which again means you could have done everything under the radar and placed on this list. Actually, that's slightly incorrect. That's where the bottom of the quote-unquote below, the small press, indie press stuff, they actually gave 1,001 items this time, I believe,
mm-hmm.
and that puts it somewhere around 1,600 to 1,778 units at the bottom of, that's what rank 1,000 did, is the 1,778.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But even so, that's about, what, a third of what you could do below the radar over the course of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot of different items. I'm trying to think if there was anything I saw on this list that just, wow, I can't believe this made it, or...
Well, it is interesting. I just noticed if you look below that, you know, that 1,001 cutoff, there's a decent number of Valiant books, which is something that, you know, we've talked about, not recently, but in the past, about how good the material is from Valiant, but just how hard it seems to for them to be able to get a foothold.
Yeah. Well, and what happens is below that radar, they give a shorter list every month and at the year end of what they consider small press and indie press.
Mm-hmm.
Indie press tends to also include maybe some of the, again, IDW, Dark Horse, Boom, Dynamite, that kind of stuff. And then below that, that small press indie is the even smaller ones. And there's definite overlap on the two lists.
Mm-hmm.
But they're basically, what they do is they know Marvel, DC, Image is going to crowd out a bunch of people. So they take the premier publishers out to get the small press. Then they take that next level out to get the indie press. Just, again, give a little more visibility.
Makes sense.
So it's interesting. It's good to see Valiant Oni have some presence here. Valiant also, of course, had a couple of items above that on the list. I think they had 6. Oni had about 8.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they're doing all right. But you look at a couple of these trades that are just sort of the middle of the road trades and stuff over at Marvel. You know, Nova number 5 trade paperback, 1,429 units. That are known potentially as high as 4,810 units or something.
Mm-hmm.
These are the things that they're publishing the trade paperback just as much because they can as anything else.
Yeah.
You know, these things will hit the list once, never again, but maybe they're doing enough slow trickle sales over the year to get where they got. I think this list is going to be very interesting next year because we're going to have Secret Wars and all of those things on the Marvel side.
Mm-hmm.
We're also really, I don't know, not going to have anything kind of like that on the DC side. So I think that's going to really kind of skew things. The only Convergence item to make the list was the Convergence hardcover itself at rank 355 with estimated or reported units of 3,164, potentially 4,511 unreported units, putting it around 7,675 units.
Hmm. I mean, to be honest, that seems a little high for me. But I guess for its one of its major events, if you look at that in terms of the entire chart, not so good for DC. But I don't know why it would sell that many copies. But that maybe that's more of my opinion on the content than the actual.
But note that none of the other collections showed up.
Yeah, that's true.
And the Civil War I mentioned at rank number 4, that's the original one.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Because that's the January 07 item code. But what that means is Secret Wars and all of those collected miniseries when they, you know, come out and stuff. Because I don't know that any of those have come out yet.
No, I don't think so. I think they've been solicited the last couple months. So they should be out either starting next month or the next month after that.
So if that sells kind of analogous to how it's been doing on the monthly side, Marvel's going to have a strong 2016 on the trades.
That is true.
So that's good. Shall we move on to the next spreadsheet?
Of course.
Let's go to the top trades by format. This is one that I tossed together just because I was curious a couple of years back. We don't need to spend too much time on it. Basically, one of the things that differentiates the trade list from the comic list is the comics are comics. Trades could be absolutes, archives, hardcovers, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, you know, omnibus or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So I broke down a couple of the different ones.
All the way down to digest, right? I didn't put that on here because they're so few and far between. But we did see every once in a while, like where we would see those Mega Man digests or those. They're primarily aimed at reducing the price point so that you can get more them in more kids' hands and things like that. And, you know, they're just realistically, they're just trying to get it as cheap as possible so parents are willing to fork it out for their kids. That's what they're trying to do with those.
Well, and historically, it's worked. I can't tell you how many of the Blue Ribbon digests from DC or Adventure Comics when it went to that format or Best of DC. When I was a kid, I still have, you know, a few dozen of those.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I got hooked on a lot of these characters. You know, for $1.25, you get, you know, 100 pages of stuff or whatever back then.
Mm-hmm.
So it's ironic. It was actually much, much higher than the average cover price. Nowadays, it's kind of flipped the model. But again, get the material in people's hands. That's just what works.
Yeah, makes sense.
So I think there are a couple of different formats on here that I didn't have my number crunching do, such as the digests and the omnibus and stuff. I'm trying to see if there's anything. Really, trade paperback is where the majority of the units are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's any major surprise.
Mm-mm.
According to this, though, there was a trade that had a $99.99 cover price. I'm not sure which one that is. That is kind of curious.
Yeah, that price point, to be honest, that's probably a slight mistake because
it's got to be
primarily an omnibus price point for Marvel or DC.
I cannot imagine a trade at that price.
Yeah.
So, like I said, there are going to be some mistakes. It happens. Venturing into more solid territory, let's go jump over to the top trades by month spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this one is basically trying to get some aggregate stuff. We'll look at the charts more than the numbers, I think, here. And some of these I included on my comic book resources article. We've got the number of units over the, you know, each of the months. And this gives kind of a general trend line of how was the year.
Mm-hmm.
Generally here, January to February went down. It more or less consistently went up, with April to May being the exception, between February and, say, September. Then the units start to fall off. It ended the year, frankly, not that far from where it started. It started around 331,000, ended at 332,000-ish. So it was up slightly.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at it by dollars, it's a similar trend, a little bit more pronounced ups and lows. But really, I think the high point of the year either way was April. What I always find fun, and again, I need to get this to where it's more granular. I only do Marvel, DC, and other here.
Mm-hmm.
But when you take a look at these things by publisher, you know, you see really where some of the ups and the downs are. The other publishers, by and large, did the best in April and September. Marvel, its best months, its high point were really June and July, with a noticeable drop off in August, September, and then kind of recouping a bit towards November, and then losing it again in December.
Mm-hmm.
DC, however, went up a little from January to February, then down, then up, then down, then up. It's it had a better, I think, second half of the year than first half.
Yeah, and some of that is related to their publishing cycle and what they're putting out when, you know, like when they have the Sandman Overture hardcover finally come out versus other times. It's just some of it's cyclical.
Absolutely. You know, the trades, I think, are very much at the whim of what came out that month.
Mm-hmm.
Did they get two or three trades of a given item out that year? That kind of stuff. By dollars, the difference between Marvel and DC and everybody else, fairly pronounced. Again, I think the trades are a very advantageous place for the other publishers. And really, the trend lines for Marvel and DC on the dollars by publisher are, with the exception of June and July, surprisingly close most of the year. If we then look at kind of where the bottom of the list is, the floor of it, it was somewhere between 300 and 500 most of the year. In some cases, bouncing literally from around 300 to about 500 and then back down to around 350 or something, with June, July, and August. Again, just depends what comes out that month. But man, you look at the top of the list, two very clear spikes on where the ceiling, where that top rank one item was in June and November.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you get one or two titles, be it Saga or whatever, that just spike the list. Suddenly, you know, that the one outlier really skews that kind of a chart.
Yeah. And for the second spike of the year, it's probably a decent amount of product coming onto the scene, getting ready for the holiday season, you know. So
then I've got one other chart of just weighted by price, kind of factoring in how it's sold, what the price is, etc. We started the year really right around a $20 price point on average. In September, it got around $18, but then in October, it went to about $22, then back to around $20 in November, and then back up in December.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the year, it was climbing. It dropped a little in the first quarter and then kind of went up a bit in the next quarter, dropped in the third, and then really started shooting up in the fourth.
Yeah.
I like the lower price. I think everyone does, but, you know, I don't think this is as a big of a problem as I think we may see over on the comic side with just how prices, I think, unfortunately likely to go up in the year.
Yeah. This does bring up a good question is, do you have any sort of comparison for the change? You know, so let's say for this year, the average went from about $20 to maybe almost $22. Is that $2 increase about average for the year? Or, you know, in the years past, has it usually stayed more closer to an average? It starts the year about the same and ends? Or is that increase about the average that, so like if we went to last year, would it have started at 18 and ended at 20? Do you know what I mean? So it's like just slowly creeping up with the general idea of inflation and price increases in general.
I get the question. I understand exactly what you're asking for. I don't have the answer for that. I have not done this kind of a weighted price from, you know, over multiple years.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. No, because actually I like that chart, kind of seeing that, just kind of getting that general sense of the market's overall pricing flexibility, or I should say inflexibility if they just decide to raise prices. So
yeah. Well, what I like with this page is it really kind of gives a sense of, okay, are unit sales going up or down, or dollars going up and down? Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get a little more granular by the three major streams, Marvel, DC, and everyone else. And again, the everyone else I need to really kind of break up a bit more. But then also, where's the top and bottom of the list going?
Mm-hmm.
And then again, like I said, is the price going up or down? And the way I do this one is basically I just do some basic aggregates of number of units, total dollars for DC, Marvel, everyone else, do the math from that.
Mm-hmm.
I'd need to rework this again to get a little more granular, but I think that would be able to show us, you know, in some years IDW's really been on the rise. Other years, maybe it's Image or something.
Mm-hmm.
But just getting a sense of was this generally an up year, a down year? What can we expect going forward?
Yeah. And I can definitely see how that chart would be very helpful in the single issue realm, especially because that's such a specific topic that is always on everyone's mind. You know, the eventual disappearance of the $2.99, the much more frequently $4.99 outside of events and double size issues, and, you know, eventually, who knows, you know, events becoming $5.99 and everything else becoming $4.99, you know, so who Who knows?
Yeah.
That was really kind of the prepared stuff I had. I've got a few other sheets that have just the accumulated of here's everything that was on the list over the course of the year. Here's kind of the aggregate by title and such like that. Mm-hmm. Is there anything in particular you would like to kind of talk about in terms of how the trades did over the year?
I definitely, you know, we already highlighted how well Image is doing and how a lot of times with the Marvel and DC that does do well, it's oftentimes evergreen titles from the past. So we did talk a little bit about that. I do like that, you know, there does seem to be quite a bit of diversity. And, you know, obviously in the single issue space, you're going to see a lot more heavily weighted towards the top of the number ones and the variant cover stunts and the events. But you do definitely just see a very wide, when you look at the 1,000 titles as you scroll through them, you just see a huge kind of snapshot of the comics industry in general. And I just like the fact that there is so much variety and so much choice that people have. And one of the nice things I like about the trade paperback format is it allows you to have the option of going back and reading stuff that you might have completely missed out on or, you know, just didn't even know about. And so I just like that there's a lot of variety for people to try.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It used to be back in the day, you know, you either got the single issue or you never read the story.
Mm-hmm.
And when trades came out, they fundamentally changed the nature of the market. You know, before trades, to really be a serious comic store, you had to have back issue bins.
Mm-hmm.
These days, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to have bookcases of trades and stuff. That's what it takes. But it again shifted when people were expecting to sell out and stuff like that. But the big advantage is what you just point out. Stories from years gone by, it would be impossible sometimes to go find all 12 issues of Camelot 3000 or Watchmen or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. Here's a single thing to go buy. You've got the full thing collected in a single volume. You can read it whenever you want. It's awesome. And I think that brings in readers. It keeps readers. And while it's changed the retail landscape, it's fundamentally good for the industry.
Absolutely.
You know, but I do think it shows that the cost of that is, since everything is getting packaged into trades, you know, we've got so many things that are just selling kind of ho-hum numbers, but it's still kind of icing on the cake for the publishers to do that even.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you definitely assume that at this point with the way the business is run that they have their profit loss statement for every title and that they have a certain amount of space that they've, you know, set aside for the trade sales and things like that. But you know, hopefully they're making smart decisions about what they make just based on what they can sell individually. But I think the trade, you know, has enabled a lot of different kind of niches to open in the comics market, because, you know, with so much superhero stuff, sometimes it's really hard to get noticed. And then, you know, when you have the availability to put trades out, you have the availability to, you know, try completely different markets, bookstores, things like that, things that the way that they handle items, it's just not conducive to presenting a good point of sale for floppy comics, which aren't necessarily the sturdiest thing and things like that. Whereas books with spines, hardcovers are sturdier, you know, look more normal in bookstores. You know, there's always been stigma with comics, you know, and a nice looking hardcover can get past that with some people who aren't used to comics. They're at least willing to pick it up and look at it. Whereas a floppy, some people just are so against the idea of comics in that format. You know what I mean?
Well, there's a certain retail reality mm-hmm. with collected editions. You can put them spine out and still sell them.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot do that with comic books.
Yeah.
There is no spine, like you said, to speak of. There's nothing to go toss a logo, a title, a creator name on or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that serialized fiction versus the collected format, certain people gravitate to one or to the other, but there's certainly a lot to be said for, you know, I put down my money, I get the full story.
Absolutely.
So the fact that it also kind of facilitates a ongoing sales cycle in perpetuity to a degree for some of these creators, I think is just great. You know, if Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples had to live solely on the monthly sales of Saga and didn't have this additional income from the trade side, I don't think they'd be necessarily hurting, but it certainly wouldn't be anywhere near as profitable.
And for creators that are not as successful as them, a lot of them wouldn't be able to function. A lot of them would have to wrap their series up rather quickly.
Yeah, and that's why for the smaller press, collecting things to trade is just a smart move. Typically, those go to stores in such small numbers, it's very easy to miss an issue or something.
Mm-hmm.
The downside is if people say, well, I'll just wait for the trade, and not enough people get the monthly stuff, does it make it to trade?
Yeah, it is a very interesting ecosystem we've created.
Well, it is, but it came out of market forces, which is the odd thing for something that, frankly, is fairly fragile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think it would take much. Again, you know, we get 50, 60 items in, and we're down in the 12,000 unit area. That's not overly impressive for nationwide sales of something.
Yeah, not at all.
But part of it is because these things are presumed to be ubiquitously available through in-stock trades, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your local comic store, wherever, there's just not that incentive to go get it now.
Mm-hmm.
While I think that's bad for creating the urgency to buy, it is good because it's also kind of this side of the market is not driven by collectability.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? There's occasionally this one's hard to find and it's out of print, so you may pay a little more. But by and large, people are getting this to read the stuff, which I think is again, the end goal of comic publishers.
We would hope so, at least.
I would certainly hope so.
Yeah. I mean, to build a sustainable business, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that's interesting is at rank 99 is Private Eye from Image Comics collecting the digital comic from Panel Syndicate. This came out in December,
yeah,
and it made it to the top 100.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is a much more kind of egalitarian, a meritocracy kind of a side of the list than I often see on the monthly comics side.
You know, what's interesting, too, is depending on the numbers, if they aren't kind of tweaked a little bit by the Marvel Battle World and those trades for next year, is that being that this was released so late in the year, we might get a decent number of sales for this item in next year. So it might show up again on the list.
Absolutely. One of the things I don't have on this, and I should work towards, particularly if I get to where it's a rolling 12 months, is when was the original release date?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how long did it have to rack up these sales? You know, did it have all year because it came out in 2014? Did it come out late in the game and therefore only have a couple of weeks?
Yeah.
I'm going to filter this just real quick by publisher and see again if anything really kind of pops out. Looking again at DC, top of the list is predominantly Batman stuff. We've got some Fables. Seeing when we get to any kind of what I would consider sort of mid-list characters, and that's really a lot further down. Filter it real quick to Image. The top of that list is, again, Saga, Walking Dead, Wicked and the Divine. Again, a lot of what you would just kind of expect.
Mm-hmm.
Over at Marvel, the original Secret Wars, then we got Star Wars, then we got Ms. Marvel, which, frankly, I know it gets a lot of buzz. I'm always a little surprised that it does as well as it does. It's good, but it seems very kind of niche, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But trade paperbacks, number one is at rank 13, number two is at rank 31, and number three is at rank 55.
Yeah, no, I think that's one of, you know, it definitely has all the indicators of being an outlier, and especially considering what some of the Marvel publishing people have said about it being such a resounding digital success. So, you know, looking at that without that aspect of the numbers, I think it's hard to make pronouncements about it, because I read the comic, I enjoy it, but I, you know, like, I would say I understand why Saga's a success. I think that's an amazing comic. I can see why people perceive Ms. Marvel to be a success. I don't think it's an amazing comic. I mean, I think it's competent. I think it's entertaining. I read it, but I agree with you. I don't quite understand the huge groundswell. Maybe it is just the fact that there are so few kind of new, different approaches to that type of story. And some people may disagree with that and say that they just slapped a character, a different ethnicity character in there. But it obviously is resonating with a decent number of people.
I think the ethnicity of the character is why it's doing what it's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a case of what DC would do, like around the time of Crisis on Infinite Earths, of kill off a character and replace him with a younger ethnic version.
Mm-hmm.
The difference here is, yes, they replaced Ms. Marvel with a younger ethnic version, but the book is really giving me as a non-Muslim, I mean, I'm a white guy. Mm-hmm. It gives me a little bit of an insight into that world. Not, I'm not saying a realistic one. I mean, she's a superhero that changes size, et cetera, et cetera. But it, I think, from outside of that cultural niche, perspective, whatever, it's interesting to me because it's different than most of what I'm reading. For people that can relate because they're of that background or know more people of that background or whatever, I think it's unique and therefore advantageous. I like how it's just a different book.
Mm-hmm.
That having been said, do I think it's a brilliantly written book? No. But it doesn't need to be because it's providing other aspects.
Yeah, and I think a good point to be made is that some people complain about Marvel and DC in that they say, well, a lot of these books are the same and they're telling the same story, maybe obviously with slightly different characters, or, you know, these people are on one team and these people are on the other team, but it's just like superhero teams. And maybe the people that find this Marvel refreshing is that, you know, it does have that different perspective, and it's just compared to the other 10 Marvel books they're reading, it's different. So they just enjoy that every month, having that little bit of difference.
It's a slippery slope to say, well, this is just like everything else or whatever. Because in some cases, you've got characters that, yeah, I mean, Hyperion over at Marvel is more or less just Superman.
Mm-hmm.
But if they tell a different story with it, that's what matters. You know, is there really a huge difference between the different branches, different sub-teams of the X-Men or the Justice League or whatever? Maybe not. Mm-hmm. You know, but it comes down to what level of detail scrutiny are you putting it under before saying, you know, how much do you have to generalize to say it's just like this other thing?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. That's one of the things that I oftentimes get into a little argument with other comics fans, is that do you honestly need 5 or 6 Avengers books? And some people will say, no, you don't. There's too many. And some, when you look at the sales charts and you see how some of them plummet in the sales charts, it's pretty much proven the market agrees you don't need as many. But you could make the argument that, yes, they're all Avengers teams, but they're telling slightly different stories, or they're telling different stories, and they're, some of them have completely different characters with different motivations, and you know, obviously different creative teams that take a different direction. But, you know, I don't know. I just, there's some times when I'm like, do we really need this many Batman titles? Do we really need this many Avengers titles?
To me, it comes down to how different are they?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do we need both Hawkeye and Green Arrow having a comic at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're different characterizations, they're different people, whatever, so you could argue that. You know, Hawkeye is almost a team book with the two Hawkeyes, Green Arrow's not, whatever. You know, when it comes down to how many different Batman books do we need, and again, we have a ton of these trades from DC with Batman near the top of the list, I think we could sustain a fair number of them,
mm-hmm.
but it comes down to how different are they?
Yeah.
You know, Batman Earth 1, okay, we're retelling the origin, but it's still kind of sort of the same Batman, sort of. You know, for me, if they did, say, Detective Comics with Batman, and it was featuring literally on detective stories, it was, you know, can you solve the mystery kind of a thing. Well, that gives it a different kind of an angle to it. Maybe the Batman book is about just more the slugfest and the fighting and stuff like that, or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe The Dark Knight is the more kind of Criminal Minds, darker, twisted, you know, aspects of Gotham or something. Maybe not. Maybe venturing into the Gotham by Midnight area, maybe not, kind of a deal. Something where you could look at them and understand the different identities of them.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas right now, a lot of these different titles and whatnot, they blur together.
Absolutely.
You know, it's hard for me to really differentiate the distinguishing features between all new, all different Avengers, Mighty Avengers, New Avengers, Avengers, you know, Uncanny Avengers. That one I can at least say, oh, well, it's a mixed group, you know, even though that's a bit forced.
Secret Avengers.
Yeah, the not-so-secret Avengers, the overly overt Avengers, the Defending Avengers, or the Avenging Defenders, whichever.
Yeah. I mean, the funny thing is, you know, I actually, you know, have to laugh a little bit about it, is primarily reading Marvel through Marvel Unlimited, I actually have the ability to say, well, it doesn't matter to me how many Avengers books you publish, because I'll only read the ones that I actually enjoy. So you can publish 30 of them, and if I think 15 of them are terrible, I just won't, after I read the first issue, I just won't read it again, because I'm not worried about having wasted $3.99.
Mm-hmm.
So in a lot of ways, the Marvel Unlimited allows me to say, you know, I'll read your entire line. And every month you have to prove to me that this is a worthwhile investment of my time. And if it isn't, I move on because A, there's other comics that you're publishing that I do like. And B, you have a, you know, a huge amount of back issues that I could read that I am excited to get to. And A, there's other, you know, there's also other publishers.
I really hope Marvel is mining the data from that.
Mm-hmm.
Because as interesting as this data is through Diamond, Marvel has a treasure trove of data of, okay, yeah, it's 6 months back, fine, who cares? You read this Avengers book, you got three pages in, you stopped. Mm-hmm. They know that. Not just that you bought it, but hey, you liked it, you didn't like it, you hated it.
Mm-hmm.
And if they could be looking at that and then saying, well, you know, this... If somebody makes it three issues in, they keep going. If they get past page 15, they keep going, or whatever it is. They should be able to determine what's working, what's not, and then feed that into editorial and encourage what's working and then discourage what's not.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Comixology, again, treasure trove of this information, but Marvel's got, again, 6 months behind the curve. They've got it all themselves. They've got nothing in between them and that data. And who knows, maybe that's one of the things that's causing some of the churn we're seeing in the titles, some of them trying different approaches on characterization, on how they treat different teams, how tightly they do or don't tie to the movies and TV shows. I think Marvel is generally doing well. I'm curious how much of that is a data-driven approach versus just really good editors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I look at the new Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. series, which is featuring characters based on the ones in the TV show. You know, it's like, okay, they restarted the S.H.I.E.L.D. series, called it Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That's more in line with the title of the TV show. They're saying it's inspired by the hit series. What motivated that? How is that going to do, you know, when the previous volume's collected, when this volume's collected, etc.?
Yeah, it is interesting to think about that, for sure.
So, I think that gives Marvel a definite potential advantage over DC and some of these other publishers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether they realize that and get the benefit out of that, hard to say. I mean, I don't know if they're going that way or not. They should.
Well, we will see, won't we?
Well, we'll be able to guess. Shy of somebody at Marvel saying, yes, we're doing it. No, we won't. We won't know for sure.
Yeah,
are they looking at that data? Are they really getting the bang for that buck?
Yeah, but I mean, I think that when I say we will see, I mean more of if we see them start making changes in what they publish or when they publish, or if we see what can be kind of considered a generalized overarching plan. I mean, obviously they have, you know, directions coming from Disney and Marvel about, well, we're putting out these movies, so you need to get behind this content. But, you know, if we see some things that we're not used to seeing, maybe they are using that data and we can, you know, think about that.
It's hard though to draw a correlation between like all the revolumings they're doing and what motivated that.
Yeah.
But I mean, they're doing okay for themselves, so it's not like they got problems.
Yeah, I mean, that's always the catch-22 is that, you know, one of the things people always say is, well, don't support them because that's the only way they understand. That's the only way to teach them that you don't like what they're doing. But in a lot of ways, they are being successful with what they're doing. So
I've never bought into the vote with your wallet in that respect. It's a vote of abstaining. It's not a no vote in any particular way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's virtually impossible for them to really identify that vote and interpret it the way you want it interpreted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you think they're doing something wrong, hell, shoot them an email, shoot them a letter, say, I think you're doing this wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Worst case, they ignore it. Best case, they actually take it to heart and do something about it.
Yeah, and the other thing, point to make is that there are so many different types of comics and so many different publishers that if you are frustrated with one or a genre, so to say, like superheroes, there's other places that you can explore in the comics world and maybe find something that is exciting for you. And in enough time passes, DC and Marvel will have restarted everything three or four more times and you can go back.
Yeah. And you're right. There's just so many different things out there. If you've got movies you like and they're sci-fi type based, maybe they've got comics related to them or by those creators. Certainly there are a lot of things that are licensed properties from cartoons, games, TV shows, movies. And really, you know, I look at a list like this, and if people can't find something they're just really jazzed and excited about, either they need to look harder or they just need to tell us what they're looking for and we'll help them find it because it's out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's a definite point of emphasis, is that in the comics world, especially in the direct market, hand selling is very important. You know, you come into the store and you're almost overwhelmed with choices, and, you know, you hope that the owner or the people he has working for him are able to, you know, identify, you know, through having a conversation with the customer, what they're interested in, and hopefully point them towards something. Because with the variety that exists in today's comics medium, especially with the collected edition being able to expand the availability of a lot of stuff that, you know, in the single issues would only be on the shelf for a month or two, and then would not be visible, you know, with the expanded of the market, you should be able to find something.
Absolutely. But I think some of the onus is being able to articulate what you're interested in.
Yeah, that's true. So, like, I'll give you an example. So, you know, some of the better people that I know that sell comics, they ask people that walk in, and they can tell that they're either new to the completely new to the store or completely new to comics, and they have no idea. Maybe they have seen some of the TV shows and they are interested, or they've seen the movies and things like that. And they say, well, what movies are you interested in? What kind of books do you read? You know, they, you know, ask those kind of questions, and then they can help them say, okay, well, you might be interested in this. And they give them only one or two or three suggestions, and that person might buy one trade paperback. And if they like it, they come back and say, okay, well, if you like this, you might like this. And then, you know, there's kind of like a decision tree that can expand based on what the feedback they get.
The people that I've encountered over the decades that are able to do that, for me, are few and far between.
Oh, I completely agree.
I think somebody coming in new to comics, it's much easier to do that with.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can hone in on what they like and find a match, odds are they haven't read it.
Mm-hmm.
For me, odds are I probably have.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, obviously different types of customers.
But again, I had one guy, Joe, at Comic Gallery Mira Mesa, and this was like 20 years ago. At least once a month, if not more often, it's like, hey, have you checked this out? And in some cases, it'd be like, really, this doesn't seem like it's up my alley at all. He's like, no, trust me. And he had a good enough sense of what I was reading, what I was liking, and why. I would be hard-pressed to name more than maybe three misfires out of the 30 or 40 or 50 things he had recommended over the time I was shopping there while he was working there.
Mm-hmm.
And man, if you are a comic store that's got somebody like that, keep them. They are worth their weight in gold.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and, you know, I don't want to get into too fine of the economics of it, but in a lot of ways, the people that work at comic stores, it's not a business that you can oftentimes pay people high wages. And so you often have a lot of turnover. And so you can see how it's hard to keep people that are experienced and good at that, because they oftentimes move on to something that allows them to make a decent living.
Absolutely. It's you may not be able to pay them more and more, and that's fine. There's kind of realistic expectations of what you're going to make being, you know, an employee at a comic store or whatever. Mm-hmm. But there may be other things you can do to keep them happy.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, maybe give them a little bit more of a discount for working there for what they buy or whatever, or I don't know. But the amount of value they can bring to a store by knowing the material and actively selling both comics and trades is substantial.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, I mean, you go to your average comic store, they've got those bookcases of trades, and each one has, what, about a half an inch that has a title, usually kind of black and whitish or somewhat monochromatic. Rarely is there even an image or whatever. That's not enough to go make somebody say, I should go buy that.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, maybe it has the creators' names on it, but for the people that aren't in the industry, they have no idea what that means. You know, that has no value to them.
But that only sells stuff to the people who know to go look for it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And you need to be doing the matchmaking to sell some of these trades.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's a tough thing to go do, because people need to be knowledgeable again on what people are interested in, what would be a good match, where is it on the shelf, that kind of stuff. But I think stores that invest in that, I mean, really, this is something Comics Pro as an organization should be pooling resources on and building up kind of that recommendation engine, if you will, because that's what's going to turn things around substantially for the industry. Hey, you like this? You should read these eight other things.
Mm-hmm.
Again, easy to say, hard to do. I fully acknowledge it. Like I said, I can only name one person by name. I can name two or three other people that seem to have a good knack at it, but I didn't shop at those stores because I was traveling, you know, so I couldn't tell if they could do it on the long haul or not.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you know, the takeaway message I would say for the people that are interested in this kind of the side of it is that it does appear that you know, Image has successfully, you know, forced its way into a steady and successful place in the trade section, which enables, I think, creators to kind of have, hopefully, sustainable careers. And DC and Marvel are, you know, in terms of renewable new hits, those aren't as plentiful as you would expect for companies with such long histories and such solid characters to start from. And, you know, they have things that sell consistently, but on the trade side, it looks like new ideas from Image are definitely selling well.
Absolutely. We're not seeing necessarily the next Fables out of Vertigo or another thing selling as strong as Batman or something like that. DC and Marvel have their hits. They've got some stuff. But like you said, really where the main growth is in this area is both Image and I think some of the other smaller publishers.
And I think it also, you know, speaks to Image's understanding of the importance of having stock, of being working with retailers to get them, get the books out to them when they need them. You know, we've talked in the past about Marvel being reticent about keeping, a warehouse full of material. So when they do get reorders, they can do it. You know, they oftentimes will just print to whatever the order is and maybe, you know, a little bit over just for damages. But Image Comics, I think, understands that the first thing you need is availability. Otherwise, it's very hard to create a new customer, a good customer experience.
Absolutely. You can't sell what you can't stock.
Exactly. So,
you know, and again, I think Image is not only telling good stories, but they've gotten their act together substantially on the marketing side, on the business side of things. Like you said, they're keeping things in stock. They're working with retailers. Retailers can now take them very seriously. And I think that is not an overnight thing. I think that's something that Kirkman is certainly deserves a heck of a lot of credit for. Everything from the manifesto many years back on forward. He took what was a very interesting publisher doing some good stuff and has made it into a increasingly successful publisher. It was never unsuccessful.
Yeah.
But it's now on the road to where it's broken away from the pack of, you know, Dark Horse and IDW and Boom and Dynamite and stuff, and is now, you know, firmly on the way in the direction of going towards the big two.
Yeah, and I think the other thing to realize is that by keeping, you know, a decent amount of stock and being successfully working with the retailers to get the comics that they need and the trade paperbacks they need, they lessen the chance that oftentimes you hear someone go into a bookstore and they're looking for a specific book and the bookstore doesn't have it, but they say, oh, I can order that for you. It'll be here in, you know, a week. And they say, oh, don't worry about it. I'll just order it on Amazon. You know, in the long run, you think about how Diamond has kind of cornered the market and kind of sets certain discount levels and things to their publishers, and there's not a lot they can do about that. Well, in the other realm, Amazon is big enough to where if it continues to accrue market share in terms of selling trade paperbacks and collect editions, they can start setting worse discounting terms for the publishers. And so you want, in order to kind of hedge your bets against Amazon because of how aggressive Amazon can be in terms of pricing, you want to be able to have a good relationship with your direct market retailers. And to do that, you need to be able to give them product.
Well, and that's, I think, just a challenge for retailers, particularly on the trade side, not so much on the comics. If I want a comic, I either, you know, have ordered it from DCBS or I go to one of the local comic stores. If I want a trade, it's actually, if I decided right here, right now, as I'm recording this, I must have trade X, whatever it is. It's easier and faster for me to get it by going onto Amazon, using Amazon Prime. It'll be, you know, at my mailbox in 2 days, alongside my DCBS shipment. I'm going there anyways. Okay, that's easy. Versus, okay, we're recording this on a Wednesday. That would give me Thursday and Friday to go hit one of the local stores. Well, by the time I get off work, get through rush hour traffic, is the store still open?
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Do they have it if you want it? Yeah.
That too. I mean, even if they have it, can I get there and stuff? It's just a convenience thing.
Yeah. So,
but that's me.
I think Image has realized that and done a substantial amount of work to shore up that relationship.
Yeah, and I think it's paying off. And again, telling good stories beyond. At one point, Walking Dead was really what Image was about in terms of the trade sales. That is so not the case. And there's a certain irony that it was Kirkman that kind of made that happen, of course. since he's the guy behind The Walking Dead. But again, they had the top couple of items on the list. They had the most number of reported units. They did really well on unreported units. You know, I think next year is going to be a definite competition for Marvel, just on the Secret Wars and the fallout on that,
mm-hmm.
on the trade side. But I don't see Image slowing down at all. DC, man, I really don't know what's going to happen with them.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, for the more current issues, you kind of paid more attention to the single issues podcast, but it definitely, you can see it, their struggles filter through to the trade side as well.
People are liking Batman, but it's not like the sales of the best-selling Batman trade paperback that was still at half what that top-selling saga was this year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, again, incentive to buy. Is there enough buzz on it? It's just another Batman story. I mean, you could chalk it up to a lot of things. But again, a lot of people were saying in the yearly comic spotlight when they were predicting for 2016, it's going to be a comeback year for DC.
Mm-hmm.
And not sure I'm seeing that just yet, but man, I'm looking forward to seeing it if it happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're in a pretty precarious position because I think that in a lot of ways, one of the worst things you can do as a publisher is shake the retailer's faith in you, because then when you do need to get back on your feet, you have oftentimes have to partner with them mm-hmm. To push. And I think that one of the problems DC is going to have is that how they've handled their last few events and the move and everything, there are a certain percentage of retailers who don't believe the current leadership is capable of kind of steering them out of the muck that they're in.
It's hard to disagree with that, to be honest. I think Jim Lee is a very smart business guy, very smart in terms of doing comics, etc. Dan Didio has done some good things, too. I think both of them are good guys. But I'm looking at just the apathy that seems to have developed around the DC properties during their reign.
And I think that is a perfect word for it. That apathy, if that is it spreads to a decent number of retailers, that's a big issue for DC, I think.
Let me ask this. Do you think, rolling back a couple of years, if one thing could have changed, if DC Entertainment had come into being as a new entity above DC Comics or beside it that was leveraging their books or properties into TV, movies, games, etc., but DC Comics was still DC Comics with a singular focus on the printed stuff, do you think that would have helped galvanize them and not get distracted by the cartoons, the movies, the TV shows? And do you think that would have made a difference?
You know, that's a really tough question, because being that it's such a big conglomerate with, you know, when Warner Brothers absorbed DC and kind of I'm sure one of the main reasons they bought DC was the idea of the quote unquote, you know, this word that I'm sure you hear in business all the time, and it frustrates you because, you know, it has meaning, but almost has no meaning. It's synergy, the synergy of bringing DC in and being able to put that through our theme parks, our movies, our TV shows. Oh, look at all this we could do. And the idea sounds good at the time, but like we've seen, the execution oftentimes is what, you know, is left to be desired. And I don't know if that company can be run that way, you know, if you can just have it being its own little fiefdom, doing its own thing, not being beholden to all these other departments that want a piece of the IP to integrate into their own to try and push their own quarterly numbers up. You know what I mean? I just don't know.
But they used to run that way when Paul Levitz was in charge of DC.
Yeah.
And since he left, I mean, one of the latest editorial pages or whatever in the DC Comics that I read was promoting the new Lucifer series. The television series, not the comic series.
Yeah.
And I get they want to cross-promote and stuff, but Marvel, I think, became a media company, an entertainment company, successfully.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they're doing great stuff on the movies, and it doesn't seem to have slowed down the comics at all. Mm-hmm. DC is starting to ramp up their movie stuff substantially. They're doing, I think, excellent on TV, but it seems to be at a lack of focus on the comic side.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, a lot of what we're seeing here on the trades list is, again, that apathy, people are interested in Batman, Harley, you know, The Watchmen, again, some of the standard stuff. But the other things that are near the top of the list, down at like rank 41, 42, is Flash and Suicide Squad. Gee, TV show, movie, okay. Well, actually, Suicide Squad's shown up on the Arrow TV show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's as if the creative mojo is just not where it needs to be in the publishing house.
Yeah, and you know, that just may be a leadership issue, or because, you know, you talk about Marvel being very successful and being able to pull off this kind of high wire act. I think that's partially due to the fact that they have some very, very good people in key positions. You know, I'm not sure if I'm getting his name right, the Kevin Feige guy,
mm-hmm.
was very instrumental in making the movies a success, and his kind of almost like his force of personality and his will is often credited in being like 75% of why that was all pulled off and not a big disaster. And, you know, there's been some recent issues about him, you know, trying to get away from being controlled by Ike Perlmutter and, you know, or threatening to leave. And I think Disney realized how important he was to the success of their movies. And, you know, they realized that that's where most of the money is, or at least in their opinion is. And so I think they just have had really good people in really good spots, and that has led to their success. Now you can say, well, that's just smart business, is putting the right people in the right places. And maybe DC just doesn't have that figured out yet.
But I think part of having the right people in the right places is you've got that one guy on the movie side, but then over on the publishing side,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's got nothing to do with that.
And I would agree with you on one level in that there doesn't seem to be a lot of meddling. But if you really think about what the issues, some of the issues Marvel's been having, what have they been trying to do to the Fantastic Four? What have they been trying to do to mutants? Because Fox has the movie rights, and now that they're all about Inhumans, because all about the legal rights and the money and the movies. So there is a little bit more sticking your fingers in the pie than you think. You know
well,
what I mean?
I agree with all of what you're saying, but my point was not that the legal ramifications around the movies and stuff like that and what benefits Marvel Entertainment on the movie side should get reflected on the comic side, because they're one and the same,
mm-hmm.
but that you've got one group of people really running the movie side of it, and then you've got Joe Quesada and his group, you know, running the comics side of it. And yeah, there's some cross-pollination, some synergy, if you will, between those two, but I'm not seeing necessarily that same division and that same energy level that Quesada and success that Quesada is bringing to the Marvel comics happening with DDO and Jim Lee on the DC comics side of things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I recall seeing at one point that Jim Lee was, a lot of his time was getting eaten up by some of the video game stuff, or, you know, Geoff Johns was spending a lot of time with some of the movie guys.
Mm-hmm.
And on the one hand, that makes sense. But on the other hand, DC comics has suffered for it.
Yes. No, I agree.
So, I mean, that's what I think needs to turn around for DC.
I'm actually interested to see if things don't turn around relatively quickly, if they decide to make some wholesale changes at the top.
Who would you put in charge?
Oh, I don't necessarily know who I would put in charge, because I actually don't know a lot of the upper tier players, but I'm just saying, you know, at a certain point, these large corporations, if there are enough quarters of negative numbers or negative, you know, growth, then you're going to have changes. You know what I mean? So
absolutely. And I do think they're hitting the point where if they're not there, they're getting there soon.
Yeah. So it will be interesting to see if they try to transition those people back to creative roles, or they try to limit their job titles so that they can focus more, or if they try to bring in quote unquote consultants, or, you know, it'll be interesting to see what format the quote unquote changes occur.
What they need is somebody to seriously champion the DC print comics, not to the exclusion of like the digital comics. I mean, to me, that kind of falls under the same umbrella,
mm-hmm.
but that can see what's working on the TV and the movie side, the video games, etc., bring in what works, jettison what doesn't, and really just re-energize the DC fan base.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've got Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman. They've got a ton of cool characters. And yet, you know, it's, again, on the comic side, I'm seeing such apathy. It's as a hardcore DC fan myself, mm-hmm. I find it painful.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've talked in the past about, like, you know, that's the primary company of comics I read when I first was introduced to comics. So it is definitely hard to see them stumble. But some of it's their own doing and some of it's missteps. And to be honest with you, you know, as an adult, I just read so much more independent comics like Image and other, you know, publishers that I frankly spent just when DC is not doing well and I'm not enjoying their titles, I spend more time with other material.
Well, absolutely. And there's so much other material to do that yeah. with these days.
Yeah. And that's, you know, on the one hand, that's good for me that I'm able to find comics that I love. But on the other hand, if you think about that from DC's perspective, that's a scary thing.
Yeah. Well, but I think it's all about the buzz for the trades. Mm-hmm. For these things to have sold how they did, it's because the monthly was doing well. People talked about it and people said, ooh, I should get the trade.
Yeah.
If something comes out and the buzz is incredibly negative, say Convergence, nobody picks up the trade.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and if you're not picking that up, yeah, there's tons of other things to go read or go watch on TV, Netflix, video games, books, whatever. I mean, there's tons of choice for your entertainment time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, overall, it was a solid year overall for the trades. It was, again, a very strong showing from Image. Nothing that makes me look at it and say, wow, I think the industry is in trouble or whatever. Marvel has its ups and downs, but a lot of it over the year was just, again, the fits and starts because of flipping over titles before, during, and after Secret Wars.
Mm-hmm.
DC is the one that it's not doing bad. It did, you know, a little better at the end of the year than the beginning of the year, but it had its ups and downs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just, again, I'm looking forward to 2016 and seeing how the list shapes up there. I'm expecting Marvel to do strong, at least when the Secret Wars stuff hits, and then we'll see what happens later in the year.
Yeah, no, it'll definitely be interesting going forward, for sure.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that does us for the trade side.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify that you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the monthly question. The Diamond Order Index only goes two decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or as few as 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ath logic and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.